Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program, In the Now, Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert. Today is September 28, 2010. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Along with hosting the show, In the Now, Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert, I am the head moderator of the Bring Forth Forums. I'll be asking Carla questions that come from you. If you would like to ask Carla a question, please join the chat room on the webpage for In the Now at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. If you'd like to ask Carla a question live on the air, dial 347-884-8770 and press the 1 key on your phone when you're prompted by Blog Talk's automated system. When you call, you'll be able to hear the show, but you'll be on mute until I patch you through to Carla. Again, that number is 347-884-8770. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert of LL Research. You're listening to the worthy successor to last year's live chat on the Bring Forth website. We've gone for sound now, and we hope you like the improvement. Okay, now I'm going to see if Carla's there. Carla, are you there?
I am, Monica. How are you?
Okay, I'm doing great. I'm excited. This is our first show. Yeah. Well, we actually don't have any callers yet. Hey, you guys, don't be shy. Come on and call in. I know you're out there. But we do have some questions that were submitted on the Bring Forth Forum, so I thought I'd just start with one of those.
By all means.
All right. The first question is from Josh C., and he says, hey, Carla, hope it's all going well. Before my question, a bit of background info. I've taken a step back from spiritual texts and spiritual teachings, such as the Law of One and David Wilcox information, as I don't see them relevant to daily life. And in some cases, I've made them a bit of a hindrance to myself rather than a help, so I don't deal with them much. More recently, I've gotten into the Conversations with God information, and I find it pretty helpful. My question to you is, what advice do you have for someone like me, a wanderer who's well aware of the concepts of 3D illusion, yet doesn't care to indulge in spiritual information? As an aside, I meditate and pray almost daily. I reflect often, if not always, on events that happen during my day, and nearly always forgive and express what some would refer to as 4D love in daily life. Namaste.
Namaste, Josh. Thanks, Monica. And Josh, thank you for writing in. It's a multifaceted question, and I'll do my best to respond to the various facets. Monica just said that this is a Law of One question and answer show, and so, as you know, my answer is going to be somewhat oriented towards the material in the Law of One. Now, the material in the Law of One basically says that everyone, wanderers and earth natives and people from who knows where, all people that are on earth today in the tribe of humankind have one basic job here. We are uniquely equipped to be a point of contact between the infinite realms of time-space in the very specific local space-time of planet Earth. We have the ability to pull in the love and the light of the one infinite creator and to hold that light, to make the space for that light to flow into this world. So as a wanderer, you came here to lighten the consciousness of planet Earth, which you do basically by doing the inner work that you are doing, by meditating, by meeting the silence however you can, and spending time with that creator who speaks in silence. And then allowing that love and light that are flowing through all of us all the time in an infinite supply to come pouring through the stained glass windows of our personality and out into the world. The fact that some people like to study and some people don't, and some people have seasons where they study and seasons where they're burnt out, is not really relevant to the basic purpose of holding the light. You can study until you're blind, and if you are not loving and allowing people to love you back, then you don't have a clear energy body, you're not pulling love through in full power, and you're not able to hold the light. So back away from whether or not you're studying and what you're studying, and just realize that as long as you hold the light, you're adequate. You're doing just fine. You're ready to graduate at any time. A heart full of love, eyes of love, words of support and compassion. Those things are the things that will constitute your most basic service, which is basically passive radiation of light. Now, as to what you study and when you study, you need to follow the path of resonance. You are not just because... Let's start that sentence over. Just because you've read the Law of One and you understand the concepts of the Law of One, you have no reason to cling to the Law of One over all things and stop studying. If it resonates to you, use it. If it doesn't seem to be relevant to daily life, by all means, move on. I find it endlessly relevant to my life. And obviously, it was channeled through me. It is very compatible with my basic being. So why wouldn't I find it compatible with everything in my life? I've been studying it since I channeled it, and I still find new things in it. And I think people, there are some people that would probably agree with me. There are other people that can study it for a season, and then they've had it. They've had what they can take from it, and they need to move on. And I encourage people like you and people like them to move on by all means without a second glance, because the eternal wisdom is out there. Those of Ra are not the first ones who suggested the various concepts of it: unity, free will, love, and light. The basic principles of the Law of One are those. You can find them in different arrangements, in different cosmologies, in philosophies, and in religions all over the world. So trust yourself. Trust your feeling for resonance, your discernment, your powers of discrimination. And don't let anyone tell you what it is that you should be studying or when you should stop your search. Start and stop your search strictly according to your own lights, and rely upon yourself, have faith in yourself, and love yourself. And as you love yourself and have faith in yourself, you will find that you are able to have faith in and to love others, and that you will be endlessly helpful to them just by being who you are. Monica, do you think I missed anything in that question? Is there a follow-up?
No, I don't think you missed anything. That was pretty thorough. I think you definitely answered his question. I have a follow-up, and being that we still don't have any callers yet, I think I'm going to go ahead and ask that follow-up. I was curious how you – well, two questions. Number one, how do you differentiate between the Law of One and, say, a religion? And secondly, how do you integrate your chosen religious path, being mystical Christianity, with the Law of One?
Well, I differentiate the Law of One from any sort of religion because it isn't any sort of religion. It's a philosophy. It is very obviously not a religion. The spirituality, which is part and parcel of the Law of One, is always very carefully neutrally languaged. The language used for God, for instance, is the Creator, which is about the most neutral term you can find for the Creator. There is no desire on the Ra's part or on the part of any of the Confederation entities, of which Ra is one, to glorify themselves. Ra calls itself a humble messenger of the Law of One. And there is no attempt made to have people believe anything. There is no dogma. There, the first principle of the Law of One, or the first distortion, as Ra always calls it, away from unity, is free will. And you will not find in dogmatic Christianity or any other world religion a primary reliance on free will as a principle. You will find a primary reliance on some sort of dogma, some sort of system of belief. Ra rather talks about faith. And faith is not faith in anything. Faith is just faith. Faith is a faith that all is well. That in the face of what obviously is not well, all is well and all will be well. That is not a religious belief necessarily. And it has often been phrased in religious terms, but the Law of One is definitely not a religion and not a cult of any personality. And I have resisted any efforts, and Don before me resisted all efforts, to make of us, ourselves, any kind of a cult of personality. On my watch, that will not happen. How I differentiate, or not, how I deal with the Law of One and my own mystical Christianity is very simple. If you read the Law of One, if you read especially the beginning sessions, when those of Ra are attempting to make the best possible situation for me, they create an altar for me in the room in which we do the workings. Now, it's not their altar. It's mine. And on that, they put the elements of my faith, a candle, incense, the Bible, and a chalice that holds water that has been blessed, not by a priest, but by those in the circle around me. Jim and Don were those in the circle around me. And at the end, I would drink the water that had been blessed with their love, and it would help me to make the transition back to wakefulness. I had a little gold cross around my neck, and those of Ra were very, very careful to remove all metal from the room except my gold cross. They wanted me to have the gold cross because it was part of my faith, and it would reassure me. So there was nothing of religion in what was coming through me, but there was all possible free will given to me to comfort myself with elements of my religion in those workings. The raw material and the Confederation material in general is a big barn, and Christianity fits under it with enormous acreage to spare. All religious systems, all philosophies, all ways of seeing the truth, seeking the truth, holding the truth in your heart are completely accepted by the Law of One. They expect each of us, with our own free will, to distort the home truths of the Law of One, the unity, the love, the light, the polarity, the power and the peace, in our own ways. And as they say, there are no mistakes. There may be surprises. So my way of seeking the truth and of comforting myself with my faith and bolstering myself against the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune in the day-to-day world is perfectly acceptable to the Law of One, as would be a conservative dogmatic religion or no religion at all. Does that answer your question, Monica?
Oh, yeah. Well, so what I'm hearing you say is, if you had, for example, been a Buddhist or a Hindu or pagan or whatever, rather than a mystical Christian, then perhaps Ra would have encouraged other things in the room or whatever would have made that person comfortable. In other words, work with whatever your particular background is.
That's right.
Okay. Wonderful. All right. Well, I have another question. Well, before I ask that question, the other question, I just want to mention, if anyone's calling in, you can listen to the show from your phone. But if you wish to join the show, there's a way to do that. And you know what? Since this is our first show, I'm not even sure what that way is. But I believe the recording will tell you when you call in that if you want to join the show, to press a certain key, probably push 1 or something like that. So I'm just
letting
you know. That's right, Monica. Was it 1 that they have to push? Okay.
That's right.
Okay, great, because we do have a caller that's listening, but if you decide you would like to join the show, just push 1, and that'll send a flag to us to let us know to unmute you, and then you can ask your question. Okay, I'm going to take another question from the Bring Forth website, and this is from our veteran member, Peel Street Guy, and he says, "Hi, Carla, I hope you're feeling better by the day. My question is this. I live in a big city and often wish I could live in the country where I think I would find more peace in my life. I've grown tired of being around so many people all the time. I have in-laws, neighbors that I have to deal with all the time. I've shown great patience in dealing with them, but I've had enough of them. I do not agree with how they treat their children and their pets. It hurts me all the time watching their deplorable behavior, but I can't say anything ever because they become very angry and defensive. I have to walk on eggshells around them, and I'm tired of it. I'm tired of them affecting my life and emotions. I've tried planting seeds on many occasions, but nothing ever changes. I'm sorry to say that I wish I had never to see them again. I cannot stand the negativity anymore. This reminds me of something Ra had said about auric infringement happening all the time in big cities. Am I failing to properly deal with the catalyst my neighbors are giving me, or are they just slowly driving me crazy? Moving is not an option for me right now. Am I right in wishing to live in the country where I would mostly only see the people I want to see and live with nature? Your thoughts on this can of worms would be appreciated. Thank you."
Peel Street Guy, it's good to hear your voice. I am sorry that you're in such a pickle right now. And number one, of course you're right. Whatever you want with your whole heart is got to be right for you. I would offer some thoughts, though, that might help you where you are, because moving is not an option. And I'd like to tell a little story to begin with. Back in the day, I was 21 years old, and it was my first professional library job. I was the assistant to the librarian at Speed School. She had started the library 2 years before I was born. She was up in years when I joined her, and I was her first employee. She had no idea how to handle employees and did an appalling job of it and made my life miserable in more ways than I could ever tell you. And my first impulse was to quit. Well, I thought, people don't quit in the professions, you see. I was only 21, but I was who I am, an ethical being, and I wanted to stay in that job at least a year, which I did, and here's how I did it. I decided that I loved this woman, that I was going to act as though I loved this woman. I was going to behave as though I loved this woman. But I was going to do it with a whole heart. So I found ways to deal with her that were loving. I called her chief, which made her feel great because that made her feel like a boss. I just turned myself inside out to express love to her. And the funny thing was that within 2 months, I did love her, because behaving as though I loved her made her open to me just enough so that I could see what misery she was going through in her own life, what made her the way she was, how fearful and terrified she was underneath the bluster. And I fell in love with this woman. I came to adore her. She taught me the library business in a way no library school ever did. And 1 year later, I walked out of that job and into a job being a librarian for kindergarten through 12th grade school. And I never had a single doubt as to what my job was in any phase of librarianship, because that lady, Ms. Kersey, God bless her, taught me everything I needed to know. You can turn this around. It's all within you. It's not out there. They are a hall of mirrors. I hate to tell you this because it's hard to hear, but even in the country, you are going to find things that you hate. You are going to find them in your cabin all by yourself, because the things that make you peaceful or cut up are within you. There is in all of us elements of personality that have not yet been loved, appreciated, and accepted by ourselves. We are all 360 degrees of personality. And the challenge is when we see in the mirror something that makes us sick at our stomach, to look at that and say, where am I in that? Let me find that in myself. Now let me tell another little story. There's a Hawaiian practice called Ho'oponopono. And the theory there is that you heal someone else by healing yourself. This doctor believed thoroughly in Ho'oponopono, being a native Hawaiian. And he was in a Hawaiian mental hospital for criminals. And he went in, and he never met any of the criminals. He took their cases. He took their files in his office. And one by one, he would take the file, and he would read the file. And, of course, they were all desperately bad people in the eyes of the world. They wouldn't have been put away if they weren't, right? So he looked at each case file, he found that place within himself, that lost, dark, service-to-self place that had not yet been loved. And he set himself to heal that part of himself. He did this with all of his patients, and across the board, they all got better. Those who were not able to sit still became able to sit still. Those who were on terribly heavy medication, so they were sleeping all the time, became able to be more wakeful and still behave, basically. The healing rate shot up, and all of this was without his ever seeing those people. He was working strictly within himself. And Peel Street, this is what you got to do for yourself. You have to look yourself in the eye, not in by projecting out to the other people. But when something has triggered you and you just are just sick to death and you can't stand it and they're treating people wrong and blah, 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 go find that place within yourself. Sit with it. Little by little, come to accept it and ask it to serve you. Ask it to serve the light that is in you. Redeem it by asking it to serve the light within you, so that as you enter your own heart, you are bringing all of yourself, the shadow side too, into your own heart. And fall in love with yourself, Peel Street. Just totally fall in love with your whole imperfect, unredeemed self. The self that you are seeing being triggered by all these people around you in the big city. They are not really there because they are you and you are they. That's the way the law of one works. So don't look away. Just keep looking into the mirror, into your own eyes, and look again, and seek the silence, and look again, and seek comfort, and look again. And little by little, you are going to find that there is a change in your eyes. There is a change in your heart. You are not going to approve of the way other people treat their children. You are not going to approve of politics or economics or the way the schools are run or any of those things that make the news and break your heart. Your heart will continue to break, but it will be a happy heart. It will be a heart of love, and it will not be a heart in which there is an iota of judgment or criticism for others. There will be an increasingly deep understanding of humanity and the bad choices that people make on a continuing basis when they are not attending to consciousness. I could say this in a lot of different ways, but it's all about love. And it's not the kind of love that is for a little while. It's not the kind of love that's human. It's the love that comes from the Creator. It's the love of Jesus on the cross saying, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do." They truly don't know Beale Street. They don't know what they're doing. Most people are totally unawakened. They're sleeping. That's not your problem. They can go on sleeping. Everybody's got his own alarm clock. They don't need to be awakened by you. Sure, it's fine to drop a seed once in a while, but don't look back. Toss it over your shoulder and go on your way, because it's time for you to be joyful. Find the joy within you that it passes all human understanding, and live there every single moment that you can. I wish you the best of luck, because this is a long and hard journey. But every day, in every way, you can do it. Good luck.
Okay. Whew. Okay, that was awesome. I love the story about the Ho'oponopono. I never can say that. Ho'oponopono.
Ho'oponopono.
Is that what they said? Okay. Okay. With the doctor, that's such a beautiful story and a wonderful technique as well, the prayer that goes with that. Carla, you covered that pretty thoroughly, but I was wondering if you could just briefly expound a bit more, I guess that's a contradictory there, briefly expound, on the aspect of the mirrors. You mentioned that we're mirroring to one another and find that aspect of yourself that's being mirrored by the other person. What if someone feels that, oh gosh, there's no way that person is, you know, I'm nothing like that person. How can I possibly find that aspect in myself? It's not there. I'm nothing like that. Could you maybe address that? Like, how do we find that aspect that's being mirrored to us? How do we find it in ourselves?
Okay, sure. Well, of course, our enculturation encourages us to behave. From the earliest years of our lives, we are not taught to be. We're taught to behave. We are not taught to value our unredeemed selves. We are taught to conform, to adapt. This is the way things are done. This is manners. This is, you know, this is the way you must ask in order to slip through the wheels of society without causing any squeaks. And, you know, there is a tremendous power that our peers have to cause us to conform. Everybody remembers school days, and gosh, I remember when I was in school, the look was real preppy, and there was a certain white blouse with a Peter Pan collar and a certain brand. It was one particular blouse. If you didn't have that blouse, you were not quite with it, and I never got that blouse because it was an expensive $32 blouse, and this was back in the 60s and 50s when $32 would be like over 100 now. So I never had the right clothes, but I felt that. I knew that I didn't look quite right. I had the loafers, but they weren't Basswegians. They didn't have the tassels. You know, those were expensive shoes. I had loafers, but I didn't have the right ones. And there were all these minor differences that were huge in my eyes, and it mattered to me at that time. So these things loom large, And we want to conform. We want to adapt. We want to be normal. We want to belong. And so we grow up doing our best to fit in and adapt. And, of course, you know, some of us can't do that. A lot of the people that are wanderers, a lot of the people that the raw material speaks to, never were able to adapt a moment in their whole lives. And so they were always on the outside looking in and never felt at all comfortable with the crowd. But there was that wish that it could be easy, that we could fit in. And you see, all of this is talking about the surface of life. We're taught to skate across the pond, or say even the ocean of life, like a water bug, never breaking the surface, just floating on the meniscus, floating on the buzz and on what's in and how to adapt and how to belong. So when you attempt to see the world as a hall of mirrors and to get the world to speak to you in a way that indicates that you're a responsible human being that is attentive to the present moment and that is really attempting to work life like the game it is, to go not just a little below the surface but deeply below the surface, so that you can move into finding out who you really are. You're going against all the intuitions that you've been taught since childhood. And a lot of people get stuck right there. It's just like, I can't do this. I don't see it. Most of all, once we have decided that we are going to adapt, we play a role. We wear a mask. We're the good person. We always do the right thing. We've got rules. We can show them to you. It's the Ten Commandments. It's the rules of society. It's the rules in the Constitution. It's the rule of law. It's rules, rules, rules. And, you know, you just list one thing after another, and that's who you are. You're the good person. Well, we're all things. The law of one says we are all things, all feelings, all emotions. We are everything that there is, because there is only one thing, and that is the Creator. We're all part of the Creator. And that's true. You see, we have a brain with our head. We have a brain with our heart. The brain in our head is called the brain. The brain in our heart tends to be called things like intuition or mysticism or something like that. But actually, I like to call it the biocomputer brain and consciousness. Now, each of our biocomputers is different. Consciousness is one. So basically, we're trying to make the difference between the head and the heart, which is maybe 12 to 14 inches if you measure it down our faces and across our necks. Well, it's the longest distance in our lives. When we get into the consciousness of the heart, we realize that we are all one and that we are all Creator. We are very young co-creators. We don't really know how to go on yet. But that's who we are. That's our identity. And so what is it to be all things? Well, it's to be all the good things that we've learned how to be, the mask that we wear. And we wear it very deeply. We have no idea really most of the time that it's a mask. Plus, it's all the things that we know are not right to do, which we would never do. Well, why would we never do them? Well, the culture says don't do those things. But you see, we have it in us, in the right circumstances, to do virtually anything. It's all within us. It has to be all within us if there's a unified creation. That's where the Hall of Mirrors comes in. If we are all one, then as John Lennon said, and I never get this quote right, I am he and you are he and we are all together.
I think
we're
you got
all
it right.
Together.
Huh? I don't think you got the quote right.
Well, sort of. There's an as instead of an and anyway, you get the idea. And so when we look in the mirror and we see something that is appalling to us, instead of contracting against it, putting up defense against it, wincing, turning away, getting sick to our stomachs, and so forth. What we need to do is look carefully at that mirror, because that mirror is showing us a part of ourselves that we don't want to see. We really don't want to see it. I mean, really don't want to see it. So it is very difficult for most good people to think, well, that too is I. But that is one of the Buddhist tenets. That's a cliche for Buddhist students, is tat tvam asi, that too is I. And the value of realizing that is that then you can do the work that gives you. You see, you get catalyst from outside. You bring that into your heart, and then you ask yourself, okay, let me feel that righteous indignation. Let me just really amp that up and just feel how that feels. Okay, now let me find the opposite. Let me find the opposite emotion to that. And then you find a lovely, sweet, light, uplifted emotion. And you hold those two in your mind after experiencing both. And you see the balance. And you realize that all is one. We had the choice, and we chose not to express those things that we have contracted against. But the next time that you see that precisely same thing, you will see the trigger that much more quickly. And if you work with these emotions over a period of years, and instead of reacting impulsively and negatively, you thoughtfully, gently pull those into your heart and come to find them in the self and come to ask them to work for the light, then gradually you are redeeming that whole self so that you become a great-hearted person little by little by your own work, by your own seeking within for the truth. Nobody wants to be the murderer. Nobody wants to be the abuser or the stealer or any of those other things that one sees in one's thoughtless, careless neighbors. But we have it within us. And if we can come to find it within ourselves and to heal it within ourselves, then we become able to forgive it in ourselves and to forgive it in others. And this means that we can live a life that is not particularly reactive to the folly that goes on around us, that we still consider folly. We don't choose to act out on those things. But now, you see, we're free from all of the bother and all of the time that it takes to react negatively to those other people about whom we can do nothing. As you said, Peel Street, you can do absolutely nothing for those people. You can do nothing to change those people. You can do everything to change the way you see them. See with eyes of love. That's the best I can offer.
Okay.
Monica, you got a follow-up to that?
Ooh, no, I don't think so. I think you pretty much covered it. Okay, we have a question from our chat room, and I want to also mention that anyone that would like to call in, that phone number once again is 347-884-8770. That's 347-884-8770. And if you hit the one key on your phone, you'll join our discussion. Now, for now, we have a question from our member from the Bring Forth Forum, Publissimo. And he says, Carla, thank you so much for your wonderful service. I truly believe that forgiveness does break the wheel of karma. Forgiveness of others comes very naturally to me, and despite having been harmed and mistreated many times in my difficult life, I hold no rancor towards others in my heart. I can forgive others almost instantly once I'm centered and never harbor grudges. I feel I can see so clearly in this area. But alas, my crystal eyes fail me when they rest upon a mirror. I find it difficult, if not impossible, to forgive myself for my own transgressions. I'm not sure why it's so difficult to forgive myself when forgiveness in general comes so easily. Can you offer me any advice about this?
Okay, Pablo. I understand that feeling because I think not only I, but almost anyone who has a conscience finds the self the hardest to forgive. We know our secret thoughts. We know the things that don't come out, that don't get said. We are fully aware of every negative thought that we might have. And I have many in a day. Oh, my goodness. I am a natural critic, and I am merciless. I usually don't say a thing, but my opinions are judgmental. However, it doesn't trouble me much after decades of working on myself. I can't change my personality. I can't change what impulses are going to pass through my mind first. I am always going to forgive others, and I am always going to hold myself in judgment. It's just the way I am. Maybe it was caused in part by having perfectionistic parents whose reaction to anything I did was that I could do it better. I remember multiple times I had grades that had all A's and one B. I was very good at school. But occasionally a teacher and I would disagree on something, or a teacher would, actually I had a teacher accuse me of plagiarizing in English class in sophomore year and actually failed me on a couple of papers because she was certain that I'd copied them from someone and she couldn't find it. Of course, I'd written them. She was absolutely convinced that I was incapable of writing at that level, and therefore she just flunked me. So, you know, it's like, excuse me, but I'm living here. I actually do exist. But at any rate, I've had this tendency ever since I was a kid to spend a lot of time in self-judgment and agonizing over whether I did the right thing and then being sure that I made the wrong decision, blah, blah, blah. And I think that the reason for that is that everybody else is editing what they have to say and making it all sound Sunday best, you know, whereas we are unable to edit. We know exactly what we think, and it's only, you know, the surface, the tip of the iceberg is the good stuff, and then there's all this other judgmental stuff going on. So naturally, we're going to be self-critical. It's just going to happen, and the more tender one's conscience, the rockier the road is for us because we see so many things where we could have done better. It's just going to be that way for the rest of your life. So what you need to do is hunker down with yourself and realize that the Creator offered us the opportunity to go into the valley of the shadow of death. That's what I see this earth as being. It's a shadow land. Nothing is what it seems. The world is actually atoms in space and motion, not mass. But we have to believe that we're sitting in a chair and that our hands can grasp the paper that I'm holding in my hand and that things work the way they work because of the illusion being so heavy. As Wordsworth said, we trail clouds of glory as we come into this world, and then we forget where we've been, and we're sunk into this shadow land. And there is no way to prove anything that has to do with faith at all. So we are vulnerable to the judgment of ourselves because we cannot see beyond our personality shells. and those gifts of the culture and our upbringing and so forth that are so terribly imperfect and so thoughtless in terms of the consciousness that created them. The secret to coming to love the self is to apply to the self the same compassion and balm of Gilead that you apply to everyone else. That sounds so simple that it's, why should I say that? But it's the simple truth. The reason that you can forgive others is that basically they do not matter to you. You can be the great God on Olympus and forgive them and tolerate them and be good to them because, after all, it's your creation and you're God, right? That's basically the way it all works. We all have our own little monadic creation, and it feels very real to us. What we need to do is allow into that forgiveness ourselves as well, and first off, before anybody else. I think the seeker's first work is generally with himself. To begin not just to like the good part of the self, but to like the whole part of the self, to see beyond the personality shell, what Freud called the ego, because the ego is something that, well, just figure that an incarnation in our soul stream is like a trip. And it's not like a long trip, it's like a weekend. And we pack our bags, okay, be here, this relationship, that relationship, let's see, got to build redundancy into the system. I'm going to put a whole bunch of relationships in here in case I screw up one, then I just move on, find another. There's no end to the contracts that I've made with people by now. I'll work with all of these people if necessary, but I probably won't get halfway through the list. Okay, got the relationships, got the mom, got the dad, got the friends, got the lovers, got the mate, got the kids. Okay, now let's see. What do I want to be? Let's see. I'm going to put some gifts in there. I'm going to put some limitations in there, some challenges, and I'm going to put some traits. Okay, let's see. I'm going to be this. I'm going to be that. I'll be that. Okay, and that's all. Now, your closet's still full. Everything on your nightstand is almost all there. You're just bringing enough for a weekend. So say that you had a purpose in this incarnation. Say you wanted to balance wisdom and love. So you brought a bunch of things there that were not lovable so that you could learn to love yourself. That sounds to me like your situation. Okay. Why did you keep putting yourself in the situation where you judged yourself? Why did you keep not liking yourself? You're trying to balance something in yourself in this boot camp that we call life. So by all means, focus on it. Work to balance it. Tell yourself every day, here I stand all ragged and dirty. Kiss me quick or I'll run like a turkey. I wrote that in my book 101 because I used to say that as a little kid, and I always loved it because we're all kids with dirt on our faces. We all need love, and we need it from ourselves more than we need it from anybody else. We need the approval of ourselves. And the only way we're going to get that approval is to forgive, 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 because we all have this incredible mass of judgment and criticism and stuff that we can trot out. And, you know, some people trot it out against other people. They project it outward because they can't really bear to look at it in themselves. Other people are just the opposite, and you're stuck with it. That's the situation that you gave yourself. And you wanted to balance it. So every day, sit down, take a look at yourself, and ask yourself to fall in love with yourself. Monica, is there a follow-up to that question? It looks like we're starting to run out of time.
So. Yeah, we've got about 6 or 7 minutes left, and we have one more question from our chat room. So maybe we can see if we might fit this in and do a brief answer on that. The question is from Harmony Gardens, And he or she, I'm not sure which, says, I was wondering if there was any guidance about how to accept, process, and release negativity and doubt from other people directed towards our abilities or our visions.
That's a good question, because I think we all have a lot of opposition from people who think differently than we do. I certainly have had tremendous opposition in my life, from even from people in my own family. I had one brother that for 23 years was trying to get me to stop channeling because he thought that I was doomed to go to hell and live with Satan forever. And so he would talk my ears off for hours at a time every time the family got together. And I finally solved the problem, not by loving him. I'd been loving him and forgiving him all the while. Finally, what I did was I drew a boundary between us, and I said, you know what? I can't do this anymore. I can't just sit by and have you abuse me like that. I am sitting down on the road. I'm an old mule, and that's it. That's all I can take. So from now on, if you bring that up, I will just go on the plane and go home. I won't tolerate it. And for two mortal Christmases, I didn't see my brother. And the November before Christmas on the third year, he called and said that he'd had a revelation. That a Jewish friend had asked him, Tommy, if I never get converted to Christianity, will I still be your friend? And Tommy said, sure, I'd never let something like that block our friendship. And then he thought, yeah, but I let it block friendship with my sister. So he called me up and he said he promised never again to bring it up. Now, I know it still bothers him. There's no question in my mind. But he has forgiven me to the point where we can enjoy ourselves, laugh, and feel free and safe with each other. So by finally standing up for myself and creating a boundary, I made it possible for him to find a way to treat me well. And I think sometimes with people that don't approve of what you do, you have to draw a boundary. It's a loving boundary. You're not being judgmental. You're not being critical. You're just saying, I'm sorry, but this is not the basis for a friendship. And so I'm going to draw a boundary between myself and you. And I'm your friend, and I want to support you, but I won't tolerate your treating me badly. And if you try to treat me badly, I will go away. I will do something else with no harm meant to you whatsoever, but that's it. So I think that by standing up for yourself in a gentle and loving way, and by continuing then to support the other person in what he believes without criticism, you create the opportunity for that person to treat you better, or you create the opportunity for that person to do something else with his time.
Hmm.
Does that make sense, Monica?
I think it does. So basically, I really like the part about being firm and establishing those boundaries. That's really, really good. Okay. Well, we've got 8 minutes left, and probably not enough time for another question. Oh, Harmony Gardens has a response. Thank you. This is so helpful. That is beautiful. My concern is that they stick. I'm sorry?
I just wanted to say to Harmony Garden that I really appreciated your kind words.
Okay. So Harmony Gardens is saying, my concern is with a significant person in my life who believes I shouldn't be the spiritual teacher and healer I am and that I should get a real job. He sees no value in helping others unless there's a lot of money to be – okay, it cuts off there. But money to be made, and I feel that is his feelings that cause blocks in our abundance. No worries. I know you don't have time. Yeah, we got maybe about a minute or two left, so I don't know if you want to address any quick comment to that.
Well, I'm very fortunate in my life that instead of feeling that way, my husband is absolutely insistent that I do what I do, which brings in money for L&L Research, but zero money for our household. So he goes out and he works hard all day, and I mean hard. I mean, he does gardening and mowing and stonework and heavy lifting for a living to support me so that I can work for L&L for free. So I know what it is to be well supported, and it is a wonderful thing, but we don't all have that. And I do totally agree with Harmony Gardens that if her calling is to do the work that she's doing, then I think that she should do it. Now, if there are more people than she in the relationship, you know, if there's a family unit, and she's, especially if she's responsible for children, I think that she's responsible for bringing in enough money to pay the bills. So it gets to be a kind of a complex question if there are children involved. But if there aren't children involved and the only people involved are she and her mate, then I think it's perfectly acceptable for that mate to do that which she feels in her heart it is important to do. And on the other hand, always it's good to listen to what your mate has to say. If the mate is concerned about money, then review the premises. Do we have enough money? Are we fulfilling our obligations? Are we paying our bills? If the answers are yes, and if the mate is doing what he's doing because he feels that this is what he wants to do, then it's actually all working fine, and there's no real problem, except in the mind of the mate. So the problem then becomes between the mate and she. I'm assuming Harmony Gardens is a feminine name, that there is something to be balanced. There's something to be harmonized. There's something to allow to become okay. If the mate cannot do this, if he is intransigent, then there it may be time to draw a boundary and say, I'm sorry, but as long as we can get along without the money that I would make at a day job, then I would prefer to do what I'm doing. If, on the other hand, there is a lack and there is a need to make money, then maybe it's time to find a way to blend working in the world and working for a specifically spiritual purpose. I have found no job in any of the jobs that I have done that is not vulnerable to becoming a spiritual life all in itself. And I've, you know, made my living Xeroxing papers. I've made my living as a barmaid. I've made my living as a clerk in a motel. There are ways to love people and to serve everywhere. So I really think that you need to be flexible and you need to be open-minded when it comes to working with a mate. It's not a very definitive answer, but I don't really know the circumstances. And I think we're just about out of time, so I had better let that one go.
We sure are. And there is, I think there's a few other people. We actually had about 10 people logged in today in the chat room. And so thank you, everyone, for being with us. And Harmony Gardens, I see that you do have a follow-up question, and I'd like to ask you to bring that question with you next week, and we'll explore that topic further because we are out of time. So thank you, everyone, for being with us. If you have enjoyed this show, please visit our two websites, llresearch.com. Okay, I just got an alert from the Blog Talk Radio telling me we're almost out of time. LLResearch.org, which is our archive website, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. The second is BringForth.org, and that's bring, the number 4, TH, BringForth.org, LL Research Community's website featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. Have a wonderful, loving community there. Thanks so much for listening. Special thank you to those who submitted questions. If you'd like to submit a question for Carla before the next show, please visit the Bring Forth forums, navigate to the miscellaneous section, and post to the thread Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert, submitting questions, or you can submit a private question to me, Monica Liel, at magicalmoons@gmail.com. That's magic with a K, MagicalMoons, magicalmoons@gmail.com. You guys have a great week. We will see you next Tuesday at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Bye, Carla. Bye to everyone. See you then. And I'm going to leave you with about 30 seconds of Tangerine Dream. Are you still there?